Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month med plus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I have the absolute delight of bringing on my good friend, Radical Liberation. Radical Liberation, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
A little bit of lore for people. when I first got into this whole game, actually it all started with me speaking at a conference event, the Witten, and it was Radlib who asked the first question of that and was the first guy to come up to me afterwards to say broadly, oh, that was a good talk, you seem to be quite good at this talking thing, would you consider doing more of it? And then he got me on a show called Unpopular Opinions, and then Carl watched a few of those and said, oh, that's the guy from the conference, maybe I should invite him in. So that's how I got into it. It was
I did not remember that I had anything to do with that. Thank you.
You were there from awesome. The very start, sir. Very start,
very good,
indeed.
Very good. Yeah. So, and that was the last time I was in England, by the way, 2022.
Oh, was it? So. Oh, okay. Yeah. But I think you're coming again in not too long.
I'm coming again in about a month, yeah.
We must get you on the podcast when that happens. So, yeah, what I wanted to talk to you about is... we Brits, we do have to, we forget this often, but America is actually a foreign country. You speak the same language, so it kind of guiles us into forgetting that most of the time. And usually we're so culturally similar that it doesn't really come up. But our two great nations appear to be a little bit divergent at the moment on one or two matters of empire. And I want to kind of get your thoughts on what it's like from the inside.
I'm sorry, in regards to Britain?
No, with
attitudes with towards Britain?
Yeah, well, I suppose we could go with that. You know, what is the sort of mood in the US for, say the Iran thing recently? Because I get confusing messages on that. I look at Fox News and I'm told that 100% right-wing Americans supported 100%. And then I watch MSNBC and I'm told that 17% of Americans supported or something. So I don't, and obviously right. The right-wing contingent is larger than that. So I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. So I do have, contacts throughout the country through an organization I'm a part of running. Some of the word we're getting is that I remember academic agent said something once. He said, who are the normies now? I often think about that. We're having one of those moments where the kinds of things that we associated with like edgy online conversation, just normal people are saying like, oh, well, right. Israel's in control of American foreign policy. Obviously, you know, right?
That was one of those things that you always never said, working man,
you know?
But, yeah. Now, that was one of those things that you just knew not to say because otherwise you'd be banned and you'd be fired and all the rest of it. But now I see it all the time.
Yes, absolutely. And the result of this is I personally believe the more negative polls, which are saying that, you know, the support for this war is somewhere around the level of the last year or two of the Vietnam War when support had dropped precipitously, right? Except this war is starting there. Starting at that horrible level of support and going down from there, right? So I don't think this war has much support. And I have to say, and I don't hear people talk about it much, but let's not forget the context. It's just the last couple of years. I don't know how we could forget except for news cycle brain, what Israel's been doing in Gaza. Now, the Fox News boomers have been propagandized and filtered in the information they get. And so you've got, you know, 75-year-old Fox News conservatives who that doesn't affect how they're viewing things as much, right? Mm. But for everybody that's not a Fox News boomer, all the people who have been seeing the horrible footage coming out of Gaza on TikTok, everyone younger than me, they are viewing the Iran war in the context of what Israel's been doing in Gaza for the last couple of years. I think the Iran war, had it been propagandized a bit better, and had Israel not been just doing this, could have been sold a little more with the American public. But as it is, we come into this with a huge black mark over Israel.
Right? So I'm kind of fascinated that this war is starting out as popular as the Vietnamese war started, because that cost,
no,
I believe, 58,000 US troops.
As popular as the Vietnam War near the end, when it was not popular.
But by the end of the Vietnam War, you were down 58,000 troops.
Right.
58,000 coffins had come home. And obviously the public are just skipping straight ahead of that and saying, well, actually, we don't want the next, even if it's 10,000, we don't want the next 10,000 coffins coming home.
Yeah. And I've even heard word of dissension in the ranks, shall we say. I'll be careful about what I say there.
I don't follow you there. What are you?
I'm saying that people that are in the military are also not happy with this. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, one of the things that people talk about is that essentially generational support for Israel is declining quite hard.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to say. It was kind of hard to answer your question in a super simple black and white way because it depends on the demographic, I think.
Right.
I think that there are still your boomer Fox News conservatives who might have over 50% support for the Iran war. I could believe it. But under 30 years old, even if you get it to just like conservatives or something like that, there is no way that 50% of under 30-year-old conservatives support the Iran war. No way. That's not what I'm hearing.
Mm.
So it's very demographic. It's demographically split,
yeah,
I think.
And it's not a left versus right thing. It's not a Republicans versus Democrats.
I'm sure there's some of that because there's always some of that. Just, you know, I support my team. I oppose the other team. So I'm sure if you split it by, that's what I'm saying. If you split it by sort of the conservative or Republican aligned under 30s and the left wing aligned would be like totally opposed to it. I'm just saying, even if you put it to like the core, Trump's base, I don't think you're going to get over 50% of support. I think it's going to be under that. It's bad. That's what I'm hearing. It's very, very bad support.
And what's happening? I mean, just pulling on the Israel thread for a minute, what's happening to the level of things like AIPAC? Because it would appear that if those AIPAC tracking things that I've seen are accurate, almost everyone is taking money from this organization, apart from Thomas Massie and maybe like three other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I need to lay my cards on the table so that you understand, the viewers understand where I'm coming from. I opposed the Iraq war. I predicted 9/11. I've been against like the neocons for decades now. So I am not a neutral observer, but I will try to be realist and give you the straight story as much as I can. What has blown my mind about AIPAC, that is Israel lobby support, is that it was never a mark of shame to accept support from the Israel lobby until the last few years. And now you see candidates saying, oh no, I'm not taking Israel money. Sometimes they're being truthful. There are people who are avoiding taking Israel money. Other times they're just having it funneled a different way so it doesn't have the word AIPAC on it or whatever. You know what I mean? So they're still getting Israel lobby money. They're just rebranding it. I don't care. The fact that they are trying to hide it, that's new. We've never had that before. You know, for all these years of the dominance of the Israel lobby, it has somehow been kind of quiet in a way, like not an item of controversy. It is now an item of controversy to take money from the Israel lobby. That's new. And I'm excited as someone who opposes the Israel lobby.
And how do you think how do we think that the US got into this situation in the first place? Because I'm not particularly aware that, you know, any foreign government is trying to bribe on a mass scale British politicians, maybe because they're relevant or I don't know what it is. But I mean, how did your body politic end up in this situation?
Well, that's a long story. And quick add, I have a series that I'm still doing on the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. I've called it the specialist relationship, as in special, specialer, specialist. It's obviously a play, Dan, on the special relationship between the U.S. and U.K. And I'm like, yeah, but there's one that's even more special. It's even the specialist relationship, the U.S. and Israel. And so, you know, in that series, I went through Mearsheimer and Walt's Israel lobby, and then I've covered a number of other aspects, and now I'm working on the nuclear aspect, Israel having nuclear weapons and how that plays into the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. Turns out to be a really significant part of it, actually. The relationship was not so strong right away. You know, though the U.S. under Truman recognized, like the USSR did, recognized Israel immediately in 1948, there was some back and forth. You might remember the Suez Crisis.
Well, I didn't remember it, but I've heard of it.
You might know about it. That was a case where the U.S. did not do what Israel wanted to do, famously, under Eisenhower. But that was a long time ago. And by the 80s, I would say, the Israel lobby had absolutely consolidated its control of the U.S. empire. And thus we see Reagan acting very much, being surrounded by neocons. Basically, neocons have been surrounding the president starting in the 80s and ever since. They just don't seem to go away, no matter who we vote for, no matter whether it's Republican or Democrat. Their foreign policy advisor is a neocon, et cetera, et cetera.
So I suppose I had always been thinking about the neocons as something that overlapped with the Israeli lobby, but wasn't necessarily the same thing. But I mean, the way you've implied several times is that they're effectively the same thing.
Yeah, I used to think of neocons as like maybe they were sort of a faction and Israel wasn't necessarily happy with them. I have learned more and I reject that at this point. There is an international network of Zionists who work together. Some of them have positions of power in the U.S. government. Some of them are in Israel. Some of them are in the U.K. There are others who are aligned with them who are, like Tony Blair, as Academic Agent has just been highlighting. Tony Blair is a fully signed up member of the Zionist Influence Network. It's an international network. It's very powerful. And the neocons are, you could say, one part of it, but they are part of it.
Yes. And what do you think about the theory that I've heard advanced from a number of US influencers that effectively the neocons realize that their image is shot, and what they're doing is they're kind of pushing this neocon adventure onto Trump, letting him take full ownership of it, let him crash out, and then they can get back to a subtle but clever neocon president like Obama, who basically does all the things that they want, but knows how to sell it in a smooth, reassuring voice that could also do nature documentaries, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in a sardonic praise of Trump for a moment, this is what's so fun about Trump is he just says things,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Other presidents would have known not to just say it when the mic is on, so to speak. Mm. Trump does. And he just says, yeah, Miriam Adelson gave me a bunch of money. And so I moved the capital. I moved the embassy to Jerusalem. He just says it. I mean, I can share the clip with you if you haven't seen it, et cetera, right? He just, all this stuff that had been smoky brooms and dark conspiracies, Trump just tells us, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. I'm doing this for Israel. I'm doing this because rich Jewish donors are giving me millions of dollars. Done, right? Anyway, sorry, that I got distracted with that point. What was your question?
The theory was, is that they kind of dumped this unpopular neocon adventure onto him.
Yeah.
And then they're right. Basically going to let him take the fall for it and then get a smooth-talking Obama-type salesman to do the same thing, but in a more better delivery.
Yeah, okay. I think we should be very careful about confusing people coming up with plans on the fly in the face of changing circumstances with a grand master plan that they planned decades ago or something like that. I don't buy it in this case. As Academic Agent has said, the regime wanted Trump. They got Trump this time. right? Last time they didn't, but this time they did. They wanted Trump to do certain things, like launch the Iran war. The Iran war has blown up in their face. I guess they thought they would pull it off, but they're not pulling it off. And so now they are, pivoting and would like to lay it all on Trump and, to segue a little bit, blame Europe and et cetera, right? But it's just, they're just running away from the smelly thing and trying to get the smell off them. Our job is to make sure that the smell doesn't get off them.
I'd love to pivot to the Europe thing, but just before we do.
Yeah.
We know that Trump just says stuff.
Right.
But Rubio doesn't just say things. He is a politician in the classic mold. And yet he linked the operation very, very clearly to Israel. Do you think
he just had an
off day? He didn't get enough sleep that night and he just misspoke? Or was that a very deliberate, subtle message that he put in there?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, the name has left my mind. Who's the guy who just... Joe Kent. Kent was extremely explicit about this in his resignation letter as well, right? Mm. You're basically saying, why would Rubio say that?
Well, we've mentioned Academic Agent a number of times. He's got this sort of theory that the deep state, or at least an element of the deep state, has decided that this no longer works for the US and they're basically trying to sever ties. And perhaps Rubio's misspeaking is part of that, because actually Rubio is not the sort of guy who does misspeak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's more careful with his words. I don't know. Again, I try not to talk about things that I don't know. You know, I think it's fun to entertain AA's theory that his cope, as he calls it, his cope theory, that the deep state is secretly working against Big Zio. The play there would be just to shrink the Zionist influence down so that it's a little more like the influence of France or England on American foreign policy, as opposed to what it is now, this dominant thing, right? They want them to be at the table, but not dominating the table, right? That would be the idea.
Does France or Britain have any influence on US foreign policy? I'm not aware of any.
Well, right, exactly. Even when I said that, it implies a balance that isn't even there, right? Because basically, if Israel cares about it, then you get nothing, right? So if the UK wants something and Israel wants the opposite, Israel's going to get it. I would think the influence would be in the spaces in between, where Israel doesn't care one way or the other. Okay, we can give that to the UK, right?
Right.
I mean, but Israel trumps. Israel's the trump card right now, for sure.
You mentioned Suez a moment ago, and the US didn't get involved in that. But of course, I mean, what Suez really did is that was the moment where two former great powers, well, one former great power and a secondary power, Britain and France, who had been dominant on the world stage in the previous century, were demonstrated to be unable to enforce their will over a waterway in the Middle East.
I think I see where you're going.
Well,
and before you go there, let's talk about the other thing that already happened, right? Right now, the world attention is focused on the Strait of Hormuz, but the Houthis have been controlling. And I'm sorry, what's the?
There was a Red Sea area. Is it the Red Sea?
There's a passageway that they're controlling, right? Mm. They've been controlling that for a couple years. Very similar to what Iran is now doing, where they're saying you can come through if you negotiate with us. Otherwise, you know, we'll bomb you, right? We'll bomb your ship. Well, the Houthis have already been doing that for a couple of years. So to me, I think this is sort of the lagging indicator, what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz. This is everybody seeing what I was noticing a couple of years ago, which is that, you know, one of the justifications for the U.S. empire, and I've heard this from a former co-host of mine, in fact, on my channel. He said, well, look, you may not like the U.S. empire for various reasons, but at least it keeps trade going. It keeps the waterways going. It's a naval power. You've got to keep the lanes of shipping open. Okay.
Was that Black Horse Bunny, chance?
No. A former co-host. Okay. Not my current co-host, Mad Mercenary from Australia. So he laid great emphasis on that aspect of the U.S. empire. And he says, well, at least they do that. Well, with the Houthis, they already failed at that a couple of years ago. And so I remember thinking at the time, well, it's the beginning of the end. If the U.S. empire cannot keep the waterways open, then its role will diminish. Not all at once, obviously. You know, everybody who's like, the U.S. empire is over tomorrow. No, it isn't. It's going to shrink slowly, right? But it is the beginning of the decline, right? So this is now the second waterway that they're losing control of with the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, and I mean, it was literally the reason why the whole world is using the dollar at the moment. It's because of I forget the treaty now, but Bretton Woods. It was essentially, we will keep the waterways open and secure around the world, and in exchange, you will do all global transactions based on the dollar, which then enables the US to run an enormous deficit, which means it can then run a much larger military than it otherwise would, which becomes a self-reinforcing loop, which kind of hit its peak for the Gulf War. That I presume that's probably something like peak US power. And then ever since then, I mean, and the thing that stuck out to me was the retreat from Afghanistan recently, because that was utterly shambolic.
Yes,
and that was a big sign. The only thing I could say for that is thank God it was Biden doing it, because then you've got a kind of ready excuse, because he was such a hapless figure that you could say, yes, the retreat from Afghanistan was just humiliating. However, we can push it on Biden. And I remember saying on the podcast at the time, the US wants to be careful that it does not have any more high-profile military setbacks or military defeats in the near future coming closely after Afghanistan, because you can blame one on Biden, but you won't be able to blame the next one on Biden.
Yeah.
And if you start getting a couple of these racking up, and then basically everybody is going to be thinking, okay, well, one, where do I get my security guarantees from? What military equipment do I buy? And what currency do I trade in? And once that dollar loop starts to unwind, well, the deficits go away, the deficit spending goes away, the military goes away, because something like 75% of US spending is welfare payments, and pretty much all of that is federally mandated. The bit that isn't federally mandated is the military spending. So if the deficit goes away, US spending becomes basically 100% welfare payments and 0% military.
If you enjoyed that content, and of course you did because you are a smart person, then why don't you go over to lotuseaters.com, where you can watch the whole episode for as little as £5 a month, which really is not much money at all, and you get loads of really good content.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month med plus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.